Philosophy remains one of the few domains where conventions are acknowledged for what they are, imperfect scaffolding that nonetheless makes possible a more personal, precise grasp of the whole. In the Renaissance, philosophy lacked schools in the strict sense. There were no cohesive institutions, no neatly codified doctrines, no official communities uniting thinkers beneath a single banner. Thought in this era was restless, unpinned, mercurial. It still bore the imprint of rhetoric, theology, and even strands of magic. Yet it was no longer safely tethered to the heavy framework of scholastic logic. If the Renaissance had no schools, it was because it had a style. What linked its thinkers was not a common doctrine, but a shared tone. Not a systematic method, but a recurring gesture, a turning back to antiquity. A new reverence for human dignity, a fascination with nature. A subtle yet insistent skepticism toward authority. One revived Plato, another sparred with Aristotle, another dusted off the Stoics, while yet another wandered into Gnostic manuscripts or alchemical experiments. No single doctrine bound them together. What united them was an invisible current of energy, the passion of awakening, the restless search, the refusal of final answers. What would later harden into schools was here only just beginning to stir. Ficino was not a true Neoplatonist, but he dreamed of harmony made divine. Telesio never forged a rigorous natural philosophy, but he sensed the living pulse of nature. Pico did not create a synthesis, but enacted the drama of an impossible dialogue between irreconcilable traditions. Even Machiavelli, who would cast such a long shadow over political thought, never founded a school. He had instead the sharpness of vision, the clarity of analysis, and the daring to name what others preferred to veil. Thought here was not yet disciplined into form. It was fluid, suggestive, experimental. And therein lay its unique strength. The Renaissance blurred all boundaries. Philosophy, literature, science, and mysticism flowed into one another. A commentary on Plotinus might be shelved beside an astrological treatise. A meditation on virtue could be followed by instructions for brewing a medicinal elixir. These thinkers were not system builders, but explorers. They did not codify, they probed. They did not conclude, they attempted. They tested, improvised, reached into the dark with open hands. The philosophy of the Renaissance had no schools because it had not yet chosen its form. It was still searching for its voice. To be a philosopher in the Renaissance was to awaken, not to feel like an heir, a link in an endless chain, or a faithful interpreter of the past, but like someone opening their eyes for the very first time. In that awakening, there was no arrogance, no triumphal certainty, only tension, wonder, fear, and rapture. It was the unsettling sense that the old world could no longer contain living thought, and that the new one had not yet been built. The very air felt different. Even the body felt different. Thought itself pressed and strained, not toward novelty for its own sake, but toward something authentic, something alive. The past no longer weighed like a burden, but gleamed like a treasure. It was no accident that hands reached eagerly for manuscripts, statues, and ancient words. Not out of nostalgia, not out of a servile worship, but in the hope of hearing a voice still alive. Plato, Seneca, Lucretius. These were not ghosts entombed in centuries, but companions, neighbors more intimate than one's contemporaries. Their words did not sit dead on the page. They breathed, and their breath was in rhythm with one's own. To return to antiquity was not a fashion statement, but a necessity of spirit. A return to beginnings, not to repeat them,